Welcome to Power of the Tribe podcast. I'm your host, John Connors. I'm the founder and head instructor of Connors Martial Arts. You can find us here in Norwood, Mass. We teach Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, Muay Thai kickboxing, mixed martial arts, and we'll help you become a better person. I think you'd be fitter.
I thought you said badass.
I got tired of the badass, Dan. It started to sound silly. When you say badass often enough, you start to sound like Napoleon Dynamite. Yeah, it sounds kind of silly.
So you have to say, so now you're saying better person?
I don't know.
More confidence.
Be more confident.
Around good people.
You'll sweat more.
Yeah, that's for sure.
Especially right now. I think I'm a better person because of the training.
Yeah, I think so. I think it comes from confidence.
It comes from confidence.
Yeah. You don't have to prove anything. You're not insecure.
I see.
Once you're not insecure, you don't have to talk back to people because you want to make sure they don't get over on you. You don't have to stand up to a drunk at a baseball game because you want to make sure
you look tough.
You just settle into confidence. You don't need to always be sticking up for yourself. And
de-stresses you.
Yeah.
I tell you, the actual act of physically training jiu-jitsu gets so much stress out of my nervous system. If something happens where I can't train for a few days, I start getting edgy. Yeah, I don't know how people walk around this planet without doing jiu-jitsu on a regular basis.
Well, it has that combination of two things, right? It's one, the physical activity, which is very hard. That's the other thing. For any, I don't know how many listeners haven't done it. Probably most have, but if someone hasn't, then, you know, it's a lot harder than, you know, we've all seen people that come in that are super fit and they can't believe how tired they are when start. It's like stand-up boxing is the same way. You can't believe how tiring it is if you haven't done it.
Right, because you have no efficiency. You're using the wrong muscles. You're overexerting when you shouldn't.
And speaking for myself, but I assume a lot of people with boxing too, you're kind of nervous, especially if someone's really swinging at you. and it really hurts or really could hurt.
Yeah.
Then you're tense too. I think you're always tense because of that.
That drains your energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you just get exhausted.
It was a big upset last weekend in boxing. Did you see that?
I did.
What did you think?
I didn't see the fight. Sorry. I just saw that there was a...
Well, you see some clips.
I saw the knockout.
Yeah. What was his name? Andy Ruiz Jr. knocked him out in the seventh round. I think if you see the clips, that pretty much tells the story of the fight.
These big heavyweights, then he got caught is what I thought happened. Like when someone's a big heavyweight, it's almost amazing to me that someone like Floyd doesn't get caught ever. Like you'd think you can just get...
I think he got stumbled a couple times in his career, but you're right, Dan. He is a master. At this point, he very seldom takes a solid punch.
Right. And at his weight, maybe if he gets clipped, he's
all right.
A little
different.
The heavyweights, if you get hit square, it's probably...
Those guys now are so big and strong. So I think the Anthony Joshua weighed in at like 249 or something. I think the other guy must be right around that too, maybe a little bit heavier, Andy Ruiz Jr.
So anyone that didn't see Andy Ruiz Jr., the thing is he weighs the same or more, but he looks like not in shape.
He's shorter. I think he's 6'2", but he looks like he has like body fat around his stomach area.
Yeah, he doesn't look like a pro. He doesn't look like some statue, you know.
Right, but he's a magnificent athlete. Like he can do so much. And I think his record was 32-1. And he lost a decision to some other very good fighter. So he's no slouch.
Right. I think it was mostly on appearance.
Appearance made a big difference, I think. Yeah, because the other guy looks like an Adonis. He looks fantastic. But it's boxing. It's not bodybuilding. Good for that guy, right?
Yeah.
I'm happy for any of these fighters when they get a big win because MMA and boxing, the sports are so tough that I wouldn't begrudge anybody any amount of money that they earn or any win that they get. It's just so hard to come by.
And you you were in Canada for a heavyweight fight. No.
We went out to Edmonton, and there's some big guys up there, man, and they're good. And like you said, they don't have to hit you too many times, and you're going to go out. It's amazing. Really big guys up there. There was a couple guys that were like 265, and they're legitimate 265.
So, again, most people know this, but the heavyweight limit is 265. So you're actually running into people that are cutting weight.
Yeah.
To get down to 265. And some of them aren't even fat, right?
Like it's not sort of like... really fat. No. They're just these are really huge. Big people.
If you're a big muscular guy and you're barely able to make 265, you're just huge.
Yeah.
You don't want to get hit by somebody.
In athletic. Some of them are like 6'4, 6'7. Just really big people. Muhammad Ali, I think, was like 212 to 220 in his prime.
So was Tyson, right?
Yeah.
Around there.
Much smaller people. Yeah. Now guys are so big and powerful. Yeah. If you make one mistake, you just get clocked.
You're saying someone like that hammering at you, and this guy's in the UFC like this now, where you can block it and it's still going to rattle you, right? Like it hits your glove, right?
Totally.
It hits your glove and you're going to be...
You're basically getting in like a minor car accident constantly when you're fighting. Yeah. It's crazy. I think it's the most exciting weight class. Some people go the other way. They're like, I like it when the little lighter classes fight, the lightest women, because it's so technical. And it is, but it's just more fun with the big guys because anything can happen at any time, right?
Well, I know the public thinks that because I know that the heavyweights get paid a lot more.
Well, I think they get paid more too, Dan, because...
Unless, not always. If you're Conor McGregor in MMA, you get paid more, but...
I think in general, the heavier you are, probably the more money you make. Yeah. Because the implication is, whoever the heavyweight champion is, he's the toughest guy in the world. Right. And as humans, that's the premise that we're working on. It might not be the overt question that we're asking, but everybody's asking it in the back of
their head. And everyone wants to see the knockouts, too.
It's exciting. It's very definitive. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why MMA is so much more popular than boxing. I don't know if it is more popular, but I think one of the reasons why it became very popular is the fights tend to finish more. Boxing went through this phase where it was a lot of decisions. And if you watch some of these 12-round fights with very good boxers and they're evenly matched, it's very hard to tell who's winning. The fights can get razor close. And then, you know, the scoring each round and then the time they tally the scores up, sometimes the scores can be widely different from one judge to another, where the MMA fights, they tend to have more finishes. So it's just more satisfying as a fan. It's like, well, that guy clearly won.
Right. It's always, especially super fights where they end and you think, I still don't know who's better.
Yeah.
These two guys.
Yeah.
It's very unsatisfying. Right?
Yeah.
You go, it ended, someone won, but it was kind of a tie, right? And you're like, I still don't know who would win if they fought again.
Yep. And some guys, like, who's that guy? Bradley. He's like so quick and he has this head movement. So sometimes he's getting punched, but he's rolling with it. And you can't tell. You're like, did he just get clocked or did he just roll with that? And it's happening so fast. I think it's hard to tell how significant some of the blows are.
So you now like heavyweight as your favorite division.
It's always been, yeah. I love all those guys. I would like to see Mark Hunt fight on every card. I like all those guys. I like the big, tall guys, Stefan Struve, because it's just interesting. You know what I mean? It's unusual.
Yeah, there's bad. Yeah. There's a few times, though, that they've got like two guys that both run, even at the UFC level, they both run out of gas. And then you see these two plodding guys that are like Derek Lewis, that happens with him sometimes. And then like if his opponent runs out of gas, and then the two of them, neither of them by round two, they can barely.
What's interesting about him is he can look exhausted and then he can suddenly throw a thunderous blow where either kick you in the head and kill you or just blast you with a right hand and take you out. Yeah.
And I guess that's what you like about it.
Yeah.
So, see, the other thing though about MMA is that heavyweight is the only division that's even close to this point, even in 2019, that sometimes you can see a high level, like a UFC level fight, not the very top guys, but actually maybe even some of those very top guys, where I can watch a heavyweight fight and think, this guy is worse than me at some aspects of this. Like this guy, like, you know what I mean? Like you have heavyweights that are on the ground and it's like, this guy has no idea how to get out of that, like how to escape mount. Or this guy has no idea.
I think that's happening less and less, but I take your point.
It's definitely less and less.
But it always looks much easier when you're watching it on TV than if you're actually
in
the cage someplace.
Still, sometimes, like Kimbo, or like with that thing where you just feel like, look at this guy. He really does not know what to do at all. And that doesn't happen at all at the lower weight classes.
Oh, no.
Never, ever.
Yeah. And for the women, for the most part, they're good at everything, striking and grappling. And
but that's new,
jiu-jitsu.
Too. I'd say a few years ago, there was a reason you couldn't have women's division, that you'd see the fights. I remember Randy Couture's ex-wife, Kim Couture, fought a woman that was like, like, it was like, she was like covering her head and running away. And like, it was just like, it looked terrible. It was a horrible look.
Yeah.
That's all changed fast, though.
Changed fast. There's a lot of depth now that wasn't there before. Yeah. And I think it's going to continue to grow. I mean, there's no other sport where the men and women compete like on the same card and the same venue, right? I mean, I guess in tennis, they compete in the same venue,
sort of.
I guess.
To compare,
I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, but the talent level's all. I think all the talent level is going up really fast in all everywhere.
Yeah.
I would say the slowest is probably heavyweight, like where you still get guys that are just like, he can just like Ngannou or someone.
Yeah, you just defend the takedown and just punch you. That's all you need to do. You don't even need to do anything else. Yeah.
But imagine being in that ring against someone like Ngannou.
Yeah, he's scary.
I thought always thought one of the worst feelings would be like trying to take him down and realizing you can't, and then being like, I've got to stand in here with this guy. Like,
yeah, he's got sledgehammers. Yeah. He's got to end up champ sooner or later, right?
Just by catching enough people in a row.
Yeah, knocking enough people out. And he, you know, he looks like a great athlete too, so there's no reason why he can't do everything well. He's got to be champ sooner or later. Yeah, I wouldn't want to be Daniel Cormier having to fight that guy.
Yeah.
Who's Cormier fighting next? Stipe?
I think so.
Yeah. But Stipe beat Ngannou.
Yeah. Well, there's still technique, and Ngannou got nervous.
Strategy, yeah.
He got scared when he couldn't.
So, Dan, we got a new T-shirt. Let me put this up to the camera. So it's our logo, Power of the Tribe. And on the back, it says, I'm at about a 7, Dan. So all our super fans, reach out, message me, and I'll get you a shirt. Just let me know your size. So I gave out some shirts the other day. I gave one to you. We're going to leave this one for Dimitri.
So you have to be a super fan.
I think you should be a super fan, but
at least be able to make a claim.
Make a claim to that. Send me a if you send me a message, I'll consider you a super fan. Let's put it that way.
Listening to this podcast makes you a super fan.
You're a super fan. And as long as they last. I think I ordered about 36 of them or something. I think that's it. So as long as they last, the first 30 or so people that reach out to us can get a shirt.
Sounds good.
So I was in Edmonton. Have you traveled?
Lately?
Yeah.
I don't remember.
You were at some graduation stuff, right?
I went to Ithaca, New York.
How'd that go?
It's good. I had nothing much to report about it. It was fine. It's nice. Graduation, fine.
You know what I was thinking about this week, Dan, is process versus goals. So I used to sort of get in an argument with some of this because some people think the way to live your life or to achieve things is set these really exciting goals, and then you're going to get so excited about it, you're going to work real hard, and then you're going to put in this great effort and make it happen. But I kind of feel like probably the better method is through process, where you just set up your life in a way that you move toward the goals and move toward making your life better for yourself.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. I have a sort of a side point, which is, I think, relevant to this entire podcast, where we were just talking about it before we went on the air today. It was that a lot of people, when I talk to them about this podcast, is like split into these two groups. Like, are you talking about jiu-jitsu or are you not talking about jiu-jitsu?
Right.
I always think a lot of the things, don't we try to like, and so this is a perfect example where it's like for the jiu-jitsu people, this is something that helps your jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
If you're not that into like, I want to hear specific jiu-jitsu advice, it doesn't necessarily have to apply to jiu-jitsu, right? Would this not be one of those examples?
I think this applies to everything.
Right.
Here's how it specifically applies to, let's say, my jiu-jitsu career.
Right.
So let's say I have a big, exciting goal to become a Masters World Champion with the IBJJF. Okay.
Which you do.
Which I do. So what's the process? So one sort of, probably the best process would be to plan to keep competing for the rest of my life until I'm 100 years old and there's nobody left in my division and I default win the gold medal. So they're pretty much guaranteeing, as long as I stay alive, I got a shot at getting it, right? Right.
But wouldn't there be a process to try to make yourself stay alive?
Stay alive, stay healthy, but also stay injury-free, still improve in my jiu-jitsu. You know, I'll probably end up enjoying my jiu-jitsu better, and just enjoying, if I can enjoy the process of it, like, okay, I'm going to train a certain amount, like not so much that I overtrain, but I still got to keep myself sharp. Then I keep competing, and then that's probably going to get me there, as opposed to saying, I got to do it this year, and now I'm going to train twice a day, you know, do some strength and conditioning, just go berserk to make it happen immediately. And then that might lead to overtraining, injury, burnout, and just not even enjoying what I'm doing.
It's interesting because you hear almost the opposite a lot, right, which is like, embrace the suck, embrace the grind.
Right,
like, you know, just like, this is going to suck, but you have this goal. But you're saying maybe that's not the way to do it, to be like, embrace the process.
Right. Love the process, even if it's kind, if it objectively sucks a little bit, you can probably make yourself feel like you love it, right?
Well, all working out, running, lifting weights, doing jiu-jitsu, it kind of sucks, right? It like kind of hurts. It's kind of tiring. It's kind of...
Definitely if you approach it with dread, it's going to suck. Did you ever play football?
I did not.
So they have like this concept in football that they, if you're lucky, they teach you early on. Maybe you're going to tackle somebody with the ball or somebody's going to block you. And the idea is it's so much better for you to deliver the blow than for you to kind of receive the blow. You know what I mean? So if you're dreading running into somebody, for some reason it hurts more and you get the worst end of it, you know? And it's very much a psychological phenomenon. So if you're like, I am the hammer and I'm going to deliver the blow, it doesn't work all the time. You can literally knock yourself out in football. Right. It's so crazy. So much force can be generated. But that's a metaphor for life. If I approach things in a certain way, they don't hurt as bad. Like the exact same objective circumstances. If I go for a hard run or do some hard jiu-jitsu, if I approach it in the worst way, it's going to really suck. And if I approach it in the best way, it may be kind of enjoyable, you know?
And with the same amount of pain or fatigue.
Same amount of intensity, pain, work, everything. Yeah.
A few examples are coming to my mind. One is are often referred to Craig Lewin.
Right.
Who's like, he can't enjoy, he goes swimming in 45 degree ocean.
Mm.
That has to hurt, right? It has to.
When he did that Catalina swim, didn't he jack his shoulder up too or something?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, all this has to hurt,
right?
Has to feel bad, but you can also, I guess he's in his mind, he is enjoying it too. He's not, I don't get any feeling for him that he's like, this is going to suck, but I'm going to do it. He's more like, it's more fun for him.
Right.
He's adapted his mindset.
Right.
And that's what I'm saying also about getting out of the pit of despair where for jiu-jitsu, where you're just like, I suck, it's bad. It's not that, so I just recently am pulling myself out of a recent pit of despair.
Okay.
And it's not like, I think it's a parallel. You tell me if I'm wrong, but it's not that I get to a point where I'm like, actually, I'm good. Actually, I'm great at jiu-jitsu. Like, it's just that you're going through the same grind, but you just don't mind it anymore. It's all like a mentality.
I totally
right?
think
Do you know
so.
What I mean? Like,
absolutely.
You're not, it's not like, oh, now I think I'm good. Now I'm doing great. It's just like, I'm not down about it. I'm not, you know, the darkness isn't descending on me about it. It's not.
That psychological suffering is largely self-imposed, if not 100% self-imposed. I was thinking the exact same thing this week. So, you know, if I'm in there and I feel tired and I'm like, now I'm going to have to roll with this guy who's younger than me. And if I don't do well, I'm going to feel shitty about myself because I'm the black belt and the head instructor and I'm supposed to be better than everybody. And then I start dreading it and I start feeling shitty no matter how I do, even right. if I do halfway decently. And all of that suffering is all based on my own beliefs, my own rules. I set up these rules in my mind and I just create all this psychological suffering from myself that has nothing to do with anything that's actually happening.
Right. Yeah. That's what I said when I'm in the bottom of the pit of despair. It doesn't matter how your role goes.
Right.
Like if you do well, it's like, ah, he let me or... It's like, actually, he didn't let you. You did well. And it's like, oh, who cares?
He sucks anyway.
Yeah, yeah, or whatever. You're just like, none of it gets through to you.
Yeah.
So it's all in your head. And so
I notice it in everything. Any kind of expectation you have, you know, it can be in your career, in jiu-jitsu, in romance. You're like, oh, I expected them to call me back or whatever the hell it is. And then you feel miserable. But it's all because you set up some rules in your head, some system where this has to happen in order for me to feel happy. And it doesn't have to be that way at all. I mean, a lot of it, I'm sure, is driven from or sort of evolutionary biology where, you know, we want to rise in the status. We want our status to rise in our group and all this type of thing. So things that affect that status tend to make us either happy or miserable. But that's not important at all in today's society. So if we could get our heads around that and go, oh, this is just some primal thing that's supposed to help me reproduce, and it doesn't really improve my life at all now, especially since we've already reproduced. We don't have to worry about reproducing anymore.
I always put it as like almost being more self-centered. And what I mean by that is like in jiu-jitsu, I'll use jiu-jitsu as an example. Like I think people spend too much, and I've done it too, of course, which is you're like, you're thinking about the other people. You're like,
yes.
Does he think I suck?
Yes.
Is he laughing how easily he just tapped me? Does he realize, or even more subtly, like, Does he know that I gave him that? Does he know that I couldn't roll today because my knee hurts? Mm. Does he know? Like, you're thinking about other people.
He needs more information to accurately calibrate me.
But you shouldn't be you shouldn't be caring at all. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
you could still get down
if you're like, I thought I rolled badly that time. But you shouldn't be thinking
why do we care?
Other people? Because of what you said.
I think it's totally the selfish gene. So, folks, if just find that book by Richard Dawkins, or probably better to try to find a synopsis of it. I wouldn't read the whole book. But the idea is that our DNA wants to reproduce itself, so it makes us miserable or encourages us to reproduce and encourages us to worry about our status, because the higher status we have in a group, the more mating opportunities they have. When our status goes down, we have less mating opportunities, so our DNA is less likely to get reproduced, so it makes us miserable. But we don't have to make us miserable, right?
Right. And in most cases, or virtually all cases, jiu-jitsu or otherwise, it's firing incorrectly. Like, it's not actually, if your status is not affected,
I'm going to disagree with you, Dan. I think your status is affected, but it's not affected in a material way, in a significant way. And even if it is, it doesn't matter anyways. So in other words, people are, when they're in the academy, they are looking at people and sizing them up and putting them in some order. Like, here's the best guy, here's the second best, here's the third best, and the fourth best. So if you're in the 10th slot and you go out there and you have a bad outing against the guy in the 15th slot, somebody might move you down in their imaginary pecking order, and now you're in the 13th spot instead of the 10th spot. But that doesn't matter anyways. You know what I mean? It's not affecting your life at all.
Yeah, that's what I think too now. I just don't care about
that. But there are, you know how they say, you should get out there on the dance floor and rip it up. Nobody's watching. And you know they are watching. Because you sit there, Dan, and watch these people that dance poorly and just laugh at them, right?
Right.
Right.
But isn't there also the parallel where...
But it doesn't affect their life.
Who cares if you're laughing
at them? That's it. Right? Their life is not affected. If you're a horrible dancer, it really doesn't affect your life that much at all, if at all, right?
Right.
And if you go in the jiu-jitsu gym and you lose a couple slots in pecking order, it has no impact on your life. Other than... we think it does and feel miserable about it.
Yeah. And I also think once you're down, I was thinking this, maybe this is a side point, but I think all of us, like all humans, are really, really bad at picturing that your mindset is going to be in a very different place in the future. Straight for jiu-jitsu, what I mean is, I think people make the mistake, it's a pit of despair point again, where people are like, you know, when I'm down in it, I'm like, I'm not coming back, right? You're like, this, I don't enjoy this. It's doing nothing for me. I suck. And it's very hard to be like, you know, next Wednesday, you might not feel that way. You know what I mean? Like, it changes fast.
Right? Yeah.
And you can't picture it.
No.
So in a practical, the mistake that people make, either outwardly, they're just like, they actually quit the gym, or they actually talk to you and say, hey, I can't make it anymore. Or they actually leave when they're in that pit. Or they just mentally do it. They're like, I'm out. Like, and they make the decision. They're like, I'm not coming back, even if they don't talk to you. Or they're like, what I'm starting to realize, even just like from this, my latest pit of despair is like, just wait a minute. Like, you know, just like, don't check out. Like, just, you know what I mean?
Be like, I think what they do is they tally up the pluses and they tally up the minuses, and they say, there's too many minuses there. I'm out. I don't want to do this anymore.
Right.
But what I'm saying is reasonable.
It is reasonable, but you can change your mind.
Plus minuses are all based on your own interpretation and the rules you're setting up
at that moment. Because I think it's all the time. This is why this is why you see people like, you know, retiring, you know, MMA fighters, like, I retire, and then they come back, or all athletes. Mm. It's because at that moment you're like, I'm thinking about it. Mm. I do not want to do this anymore. I can't
people
imagine.
People aren't good at knowing what they're going to like next month.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that I will ever want to do this again. Like, I, you know what I mean? They're like, I am thinking of the future. I don't want to do it. And then a month later, they're like, wait, I do want to do it. Like, that's why it's like, you can be in a supermarket and be like, I'm really full, and be like, I'm not buying any food. I'm never going to want to eat.
It's like, so, you know, hard. Like, why is that
so
hard?
Because you can't
even
picture that you're going to be different later. Yeah. You're like
I struggle with certain things that I shouldn't, let's say, eat. Like, so here it is. I get that super dark chocolate. You know what I mean? I get the 85, so I'm thinking this is really healthy. You know what I mean? It's like barely edible, but it's chocolate. Yeah. And then I'll eat it maybe with some cashews or something. But I almost always end up eating too much of it. You know, not a whole bar, but a lot of it. But also for me, I started to notice that then I don't sleep good that night. And then the next day, my skin might be a little red. It's like this chocolate is not agreeing with me. And it'll take me like 2 years to act on that information. You know what I mean? I'll just keep eating the chocolate every night. And then after 2 years, I'll finally go, I got to stop doing this. And then I finally stop doing it. Why is that so hard?
I don't know. I'm thinking I've had that, but like substitute like half a bar of dark chocolate for like an entire box of Hostess snowballs or something. Like, for me, I don't tend to err on the side of like half a bar of chocolate.
It's like the other thing that gets me.
I should not have had an entire box of Ring Dings in one sitting.
The other thing that gets me is pistachios. Do you ever eat those?
Yeah.
If I eat more than a small handful, I have like a little bit of a negative reaction to it, but I still keep eating them. And
And those are also something I bring the bag in, and then you look and you're like a giant bowl of empty shells. And you're like, this is like a 5 pound.
Dan, you got to get the shelled ones. That's what I get. I get the bag of shelled salted ones.
So then you
ones.
Can't tell.
Yeah.
That's for me.
Well, you can just shovel them down so much faster. You can
like
eat 2 pounds of it in
an
hour.
When I bring the bag in of Halloween candy and I watch a movie, and I'm like, I've had a few. And then I look and there's like 16 empty wrappers next to me. And I'm like, my thinking is I got to throw out the wrappers as I go. So then I can't, they're not
right.
All like right in my face. But all of this is to say, like, you can't picture later. You know what I mean? Like,
can't.
That's why they say don't shop hungry, because you're like, I'm starving. I'm going to, I'll
know what I've been doing lately? Insane like this. I buy an avocado because it's healthy fats, right? So do you ever eat avocado?
I've had avocado dip.
Okay, but you don't buy one. You don't go to Whole Foods and buy one. So what I'll do is I'll buy one or two, and you can't really tell. Like, if they're not ripe, they're not great. But then they go bad fast. So you get like a window where it's good to eat.
Like an hour.
So I take these stupid, and they're so expensive now. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know if it's.
They're in now, right?
They're in, and I think they come from Mexico, and we get some trade friction there. So they're so expensive. And I get it, and I put it on my kitchen window shelf. I'm like, I'm going to have that. And then I never get around to eating it, and I just throw it away. And then I buy another one and let it go bad and throw it away. I just don't learn. I don't know what the hell I'm doing.
Yeah. There are certain things I buy, then it's just like every time I'm throwing them out. Usually vegetables.
Vegetables.
Usually anything healthy.
They don't last that long. Yeah. So back to this. Well, that's the beauty of jiu-jitsu is I think if students can look at it as a laboratory of sort of healthy stress, you can learn so much about yourself. You can do so many things. I think when we go into the pit of despair is we're thinking it's reality. And all sports are just metaphors for life and a way for you to sort of act different dramas out and do certain things. It's not real life. You know what I mean?
Right. Or yeah, maybe this is a similar idea, but like yesterday I was rolling and I just was like, ugh, like in this bad, I was just like, I'm just terrible today. My knee hurt. I couldn't, my knee was really bad. And it was just so, I'm taking a beating. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't put weight on my knee. So I'm just getting slaughtered. And I'm like, but there's that added, I was just sort of like, it felt so temporary. I felt like today is tough on me.
Right.
My knee's throbbing. It's not.
You weren't, in the pit, but yeah, you were stumbling
It was just like I'm not having fun right now. Mm. But there wasn't like that. There was no part of it that was like, I should stop doing jiu-jitsu because, it's like it gets more and more in your head, like where it becomes this broad, like you've said before, like how many levels do you go with it? Like you can just be like, my knee hurts, which sucks. Or you can be like, I suck at jiu-jitsu. And then you're like, you can just spiral where you're like, I suck at everything. Or you know what I mean? Like people gets darker and darker and deeper and deeper. And then you're like, I'm never coming back to the gym. I'm never going to, and like.
You know what that reminds me of? Martin Seligman. Did you read about him? He's from Penn State. No, he's from UPenn. Psychologist, I believe. He called it explanatory style. So his idea was there's three P's. Personal, pervasive, and permanent. So like if you have a bad day at jiu-jitsu, if you make it personal, you could just say, yeah, it wasn't a great day today. Or you can make it personal where you say, I'm not good at jiu-jitsu. And then you can make it pervasive. I suck at all sports. And then you can make it permanent. I suck at all sports and I'm never going to be any better. So that's the worst explanatory style you can have. If you can take away all the P's where you're like, it's not even personal. It's just jiu-jitsu and yeah, something happened and whatever. It has nothing to do with anything else you're doing. And it's all going to change tomorrow Anyways.
And again, the secret to this whole podcast, if I may, John, is that this doesn't necessarily have to apply to jiu-jitsu.
Applies to everything.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Martin Seligman wasn't talking about jiu-jitsu.
Actually, he was, but it still applies. No, he wasn't. Yeah.
He's awesome at jiu-jitsu, actually.
I read his stuff years ago. He was pretty good. He had learned optimism was his other thing. I don't know.
I always wonder if there's like super optimistic people listening who are like, I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, I'm never in a pit. I'm never gloomy. I'm never in the pit.
I can't imagine, right?
I would think.
Maybe some psychos out there. One out of every
10,000. The psycho happy people.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
But I think it's good to talk about. Like, I think it's good. Maybe it's just me again, but I get in these pit of despairs and be like, I think I was only one. Like, you know what I mean? I'm not naive or stupid, but I'd be like, I don't see anyone else getting down. I guess I'd see white belts that would be like just down and quit. But I didn't realize that people that even the people that stuck around felt the same way from time to time anyway.
I think there's the healthy reason to get down is so that you slow down and you look at what's going on and analyze if you should do something differently. I think that's sort of like the purpose of grief or sadness is to examine something happened, do like a post-mortem and decide, do we have to change our procedures in the future? So I think if you look at, but people don't look at it that way. They just feel down. And
I was going to say, that's actually a good point because I didn't do that at all. I would just be like, everything sucks and I'm leaving. You know, like.
I was, yeah.
So yeah. I didn't do it. I didn't, you know, and I'm pretty self-reflective, but I wouldn't be like, why? I wouldn't examine it. You know, I wouldn't be like, why am I feeling so down right now? I'd just be like, ugh, this sucks. And I suck and I'm leaving.
Right. Well, I'm wondering, so, you know, I'm preparing for these tournaments I'm going to do this year. And I think I mentioned before when I compete, I do have a significant amount of anxiety that I end up dealing with, but it's not fun. It's just unpleasant. You know what I mean? It's like having motion sickness or seasickness.
Right.
It's like, no matter how you deal with it and get over it, you can't define it as pleasant, like having a lot of anxiety. There's no way around it.
It's good for people to hear about it, though. Like you saying you get in the pit of despair. I was like, you do? Or like you get anxiety like you do? Or like George St. Pierre is like, I'm really, really nervous. I'm like, you are? Like, you know? Or,
yeah.
Because people like the other sort of stereotype, like he's an animal. Like you hear a lot of that, especially in fighting. Mm. Like I like getting hit.
Right.
I don't know, Cowboy Cerrone. Like I just love
Justin
going
Gaethje,
in there.
He just goes in. You ever see him fight?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. He's slobber knocker. Oh, my God.
They're just like, I like it. I and then you ask, and some of the guys from the gym, you ask, and they're like, nah, I'm not nervous at all. But it leaves other people, like, it's good for people to know, anyone that does get anxiety or do get down, that it's pervasive, you know, like to know there's tons of people feeling that way.
Yeah.
You know, it's not.
I came up with this phrase many years ago, Dan. Tell me if you like it. You are not your nervous system. So if you have a certain type of nervous system, you're going to get anxiety. You are going to be afraid, you know, be shitting your pants or whatnot.
You are going to shit your pants.
But that's not you. That's not your character. You know, we define it as character in our culture. If somebody is afraid of something or gets anxiety, but it's not. It's just really how your nervous system works. And I think you can improve the way your nervous system works and then have less anxiety. I'm wondering what I should do for this year, Dan, is find a way to love the process of preparation, but also find a way to really love the competing. If I could find a way.
How do you feel about competing now? You don't love
it? There's a lot of anxiety. I don't love it. I like to win, but I don't love it. No.
So you don't like the anxiety leading up to it. Do you not like the match itself too?
That's neutral. It's just
you're just going.
Just trying to prove myself.
But so you're not happy in there either. You're just neutral. You're just going.
I'm overcoming my anxiety and trying to perform at my best. So it's from negative to neutral, not positive. But what if I could change my approach and make the whole experience positive? It probably would improve my performance even, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. But that's not going to be easy.
It's not going to be easy, but it's a more elegant goal than just winning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a deeper goal.
Deeper goal.
Right, and more effect on you, probably.
I was watching one of our guys in the gym a couple of years ago. They were training no-gi, and this guy, one of our students, was trying to pass somebody's guard, and he was going berserk. And he's an older guy. You know, he's in his 50s, but he's, you know, he's a hard charger, and he was going and going. And all of a sudden, he was so fatigued, I heard audible wheezing coming out of him. You know what I mean? Like, and he kept going and going. And I'm thinking, this guy's going to have a stroke. Oh, my God. And he wasn't finishing the pass, but he wouldn't slow down. he just had that pit bull mentality. And he was like wide-eyed and going. And finally, I stopped. I go, hold on. And like, he couldn't even listen to me for a couple of minutes until he caught his breath. And I said, you know, what are you going to do if you happen to pass his guard under these conditions? You're going to be on top of him so exhausted, you're not going to be able to do anything anyways. So maybe you should have a more elegant goal. Like, your goal is not just to pass his guard, but to pass it in an efficient enough manner that you're not going to give yourself a heart attack on the way, right? That can't be the best way to do it. Like, let's have a more elegant goal. We want to pass, but let's do it with a certain amount of efficiency and technique that it's sustainable and repeatable. It's sort of the opposite of that Rocky ethos that we have in the U.S. where Rocky doesn't really prepare properly or train right, but he just keeps getting up as he's getting battered. And we're like, that's the highest form of human character is poor preparation. It's just crazy, right? So this is my goal for this year. I'm announcing it now.
Sorry, I remember that. Yeah. In MMA, it was like Tank Abbott, where it would just be like, he rolled off a bar stool into the cage and it was kicking ass, and everyone loved it. They loved that, right? Like the poor.
We like that for some reason, but it's very misguided, right? It's not really the way we should be doing things, right? I heard there's something like that in schools these days, where kids try to pretend to their peers that they're not working hard, they're just getting good grades, where they're secretly, they are sort of working hard to get grades. Have you heard of that?
Yeah, well, I haven't heard of that. I was thinking there was an element that that self-handicapping that I used to do, which wasn't...
Oh, that's the opposite.
I wouldn't secretly work hard was the problem with me. But it would be like you'd sort of pride yourself on like, I didn't...
Put a maximum effort in.
I didn't... Yeah, look what I didn't even study. So that's walked out with a B+, and I didn't even
study.
And I was out last night. And it's really misguided. Right. Like, I look back as like a really bad thing I did through my younger years.
Right.
Like a really bad mindset of like thinking it was so clever or cool to be like, well, I didn't get an A, but I didn't do anything. And I never even bought the text. Didn't you hear people say that in college? Like, yeah. I never even bought the book. I never read any of it.
It's a tactic to preserve the ego, right? And build up the ego a little
bit. Yeah, it's that defensive, like, I didn't even really try. It'd be like you going to these tournaments and be like, I didn't even
prepare. Didn't even try.
Yeah, I didn't even prepare.
I have a staph infection, so I'm on antibiotics. I'm weakened. I have the flu.
Right.
And I tore my ACL last week, so we'll just see what happens. Right. Yeah, that's really not the way to go through
life. That's self-handicapping.
Right? Yeah.
So there's an interesting... So the point here, though, is... good one, I think, is if you're in this dark mood in the gym. I never took this advice myself, which is instead of like just being down, be like, why is it so dark for me now? And is there a way I can not feel this way, right? Like, is there a way I can...
Do I have to feel dark right now?
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah. Right. And can I approach something differently or do something differently so that I don't feel this way?
So funny, Dan, yesterday I was feeling anxiety last night and I did something good. I sort of removed myself from the feeling. I'm like, yeah, I'm feeling a lot of anxiety. I'm not exactly sure why, but so what? It's just a feeling that my body, my nervous system's having. Maybe it's not that meaningful and it's not really about me. And tomorrow I might not be feeling this way. You know what I mean? It's not going on my permanent record.
It's a weird thing. I've had that too, where I'm like, something, I think I'm nervous about something, but I can't remember what.
I do that all the time.
What is it? And I have to, sometimes I actually remember what it is. I'm like, oh yeah, I got to go do this tomorrow.
Right.
But then other times you're just like keyed up. And
sometimes for me, it's like some little bit of bad news that somehow I didn't completely process. It's hanging around out there, but it's really not that meaningful. And it just puts a negative tint on everything. And then if somebody gives you the finger in traffic, now you're just in a really bad place, right?
Right.
And they're not really significant issues.
But again, about this, I like this idea of redefining like maybe the wrong, not quite the right. Well, unless you're saying embrace the grind, embrace the suck. In a way, it's right. In a way, it's wrong if you're like, this all sucks, but it's going to get me to the goal.
Right.
The part that we're agreeing with, I think, is the embrace part. If you don't say... It's not like embrace it because you're going to get a goal. It's like actually embrace it. Actually don't hate it anymore. Don't find a way to enjoy it.
Yeah. In jiu-jitsu, some of the best performers, Marcelo Garcia is a legendary competitor. He seems to just love jiu-jitsu. Then there was an American who just won the world championships. His name is Mikey Musumeci. So he has some distinction. I think he has won in 3 weight classes maybe. The only American to do so. So he's... really good and very, very technical. So he doesn't seem like a physically imposing person at all. And it seems like he's just having fun all the time. I don't know him. I haven't seen him in an interview, but I suspect he doesn't suffer a lot of anxiety or anything. He just is just enjoying the whole process, and he's really good at it. I guess when you're really good, you're winning world championships, it can be fun, but you don't have to be at that level to just enjoy every part of the process.
Right. And I was also thinking that, though, the other side is it's easier if you're Marcel Garcia maybe to enjoy it more, or, you know, people that are just really good.
It's a chicken the egg thing,
yeah,
right?
Sort of, because you're doing so well and you're getting notoriety. But at the same time, so my thought process from there is like, maybe there's a reason to walk away. For, you know, maybe you're like you said, maybe you're sort of, this isn't for me or I don't like it. But I haven't thought this through, but tell me if you agree with this. You probably shouldn't walk away while you're sort of filled with anxiety and darkness and depression, like, because then you haven't thought it through or worked it through. I think maybe it's okay to walk away if you're like, I'm fine, I'm not in a bad mood.
Yeah.
And it's just not, I don't have the time or whatever it is, or it's not for me, or I just want, if you calmly move on, then maybe that's
you're not running from something.
Right. Maybe when you're down and dark is not the time to go on the walkabout, you know, not to just be like, okay, you know.
Especially for me, you know, the position I have in the academy, and, you know, my son enjoys competing so much that if I could find a way to enjoy it as much as he does, then I literally have decades of shared experiences in front of us. So it's definitely worth trying to figure out, right?
Yeah. And you don't think he doesn't get that anxiety?
No, he just loves all of it. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons why he's become so good so quickly too. Well, Dr. Dan, I feel so much better. Thank you for the session. I think we're at the end of our hour.
Deep truths.
I'll schedule another session with Dimitri on the way out.
We actually went over, so.
Does my insurance cover for this?
But we also gave away the secret to the podcast, right? Which is talking about jiu-jitsu.
It's about everything.
It's applying. And when we're talking about things that aren't jiu-jitsu, maybe you can apply those to
jiu-jitsu. Definitely can.
Sometimes maybe a stretch.
Dan, we're philosophers and gurus. No, I think there's no stretch at all. Absolutely applies. And I think you're right on the money. So my goal, I'm professing it here, I'm going to try to find a way to love the whole process and the competition and just love all of it, no matter what the outcomes are. I think it's going to help me.
It's interesting because I never even considered trying that, right? It sounds weird, but like, right, I never thought like, what could I do to enjoy going to class more, or what do I not enjoy? What do I enjoy? How do I make things better? But that's jiu-jitsu or anything. I don't think most people think through like, how do I make myself enjoy this more?
Yeah.
Or how do I get my either actual physical things you could do differently, or just get your mindset in a different place?
I think that's what it's mostly about. I told you that I used to be extremely uncomfortable flying, to the point where it was so hard for me to fly. I would get tremendous motion sickness, all kinds of anxiety. When the plane would take off, I'd almost pass out from anxiety. I'd have to like close one eye and focus so I'd get woozy. I wouldn't pass out. I'd be sweating buckets. It was awful. And I came up with a mantra that helped me get over it. And then a couple of years ago, I flew to Tokyo and it was a breeze. And then when we flew up to Edmonton, I didn't even realize I was flying. It was like I got on the plane, started reading something. Next thing you know, we landed. And then after I got home, I'm like, oh yeah, I used to have a problem flying. And I have zero problem with it now.
So that's a legit.
Which is, you were saying how you can't even see how you're going to feel in the future. I can barely remember when it was really hard to fly, and it makes no sense to me now.
Think back then, you could have been like, I'm not flying anymore. Could have been your solution. Like, I'm out.
Yeah. I was close to that. Never flying anywhere again. I'd be like John Madden, take a bus all around the country.
But what was your mantra? We're all going to die.
We're all going to die anyways.
Yeah.
No, my mantra was, I would say, I love to do this. Right. I love to fly. And I would put a lot of emotion into it and almost get physically loving the flying. And then the takeoffs was where the most acute anxiety hit me. And then I would tell myself, and I love taking off most of all. I love to take off. And
I'm picturing you freaking out, the person in the seat next to you.
Well, you got to kind of say it.
Saying, I love to fly. Like, person next
really
to you,
loud,
like,
okay. Yelling it with your voice quivering. Yeah. Actually, I kind of did it in my head. But I only had to do it for a few flights, and then I quickly became super comfortable at it. Now it's no problem at all. So maybe I'm going to apply that same technique.
It's all of a piece. You can be really, you can really feel differently, and it's really hard to picture that you're going to feel differently.
Right. Yeah.
ever. You know, you probably were like, I'll never be comfortable flying.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know?
Yeah. You convince yourself it's something physiological that can't be fixed. I used to take Dramamine. That makes you feel drought. Your brain doesn't work for a day after you take it. It's awful. Yeah. Now I don't have to worry about any of that. Well, Dan, I think we're up against it. This turned out, again, to be an excellent, insightful episode that people can use for jujitsu, for life. Oh, and please share, rate, and review it. Send me a message. Just send me a message. Say, John, send me one of these t-shirts.
I want a t-shirt.
I want a t-shirt. And tell me your size.
Wanting a t-shirt and contacting you
qualifies you as a super fan.
Basically makes a super fan.
That's it. All right, man. Thanks again. See you guys next week.